Chapter 2, Saturday Night. He agonized over what to wear. It was foolish, he knew. But said foolishness still found him digging about the scant 3 pieces of tailored clothing belonging to Hiro Secretary Yagi Toshinori, and laying them out on his bed to mull over the tears of formality and how best to smooth over the 2 decades of fashion he'd missed while alternating between tuxedos and All Might suits. He settled, a nail-biting, hard-swallowing term implying no amount of confidence, on long gray slacks and a periwinkle button-down with subtle geometric flair. No cufflinks, no tie. Whether it was a sincere attempt at casual dress or a bid not to be noticed was debatable. Either way, Toshinori found himself greeted with instant, ear-breaking approval as he approached the designated corner of campus at the designated time, and shyly shrunk into his appropriately starched collar as a result. Yamada and Aizawa stood under a street lamp, their claimed puddle of light functioning as a lemon-yellow beacon in the darkening street, and the voice hero actively whistled at him like a love-struck cockatoo as he approached, grinning from ear to ear. Yamada was wrapped in leather as usual, sparkling with studs under the warm light of the street lamp, with his blonde hair spiked high. In comparison, Aizawa looked extraordinarily comfortable in loose, low-slung pants and a worn graphic tee that made Toshinori's eyes stick unrepentantly on the scratches of dark hair on his muscled forearms. Toshinori didn't have long to stare or even fret about what was suddenly, with the addition of a third person, their secret. Yamada leapt on him at dizzying speeds and loudly praised every bit of the casual wear. He was clearly, embarrassingly, blown away that he had clothes that actually fit him and enthusiastically plucked at the slim taper of the slacks in particular, oohing and aahing and steering him around to see every angle of the modest ensemble. It was hard not to retreat under such blisteringly direct attention, but Toshinori made a good show of accepting and abiding and, most of all, not staring at their fellow faculty member. As if in a separate universe from his screaming firework of a friend, Aizawa stood at the edge of the circle of lamplight and simply looked him up and down, a subtle, curious something in his eyes, and the quirk of his mouth that made Toshinori's heart smack giddily at his ribs, even as their co-worker was yammering excitedly under his chin. It was distracting, to say the least. So distracting, in fact, that Yamada managed to reach up and loosen 1, 2, 3 of his shirt buttons before the older hero realized it, claiming he looked too stodgy, uptight, wacko, with it buttoned primly up to his chin. By then, he was too nervous to say no, which led to his sleeves being artistically rolled up his painfully thin forearms by the fashionable, perpetually cooing whirlwind that was present Mike. And Toshinori realized what, exactly, he may have agreed to that night. It was easy to get overwhelmed by a man whose paid profession was talking, but easier still to be swept up in a pleasant way, buoyed by effusive goodwill and a better heart. He trusted Mike, and he knew he trusted Aizawa. And it was Saturday, after all. So off they went into the unknown, babbling Yamada, silent Aizawa, and Toshinori with his rakishly unbuttoned shirt. "I'm so glad you decided to come, man!" Yamada exclaimed for possibly the 5th time as they made their way into town on foot, skittering between him and Aizawa to talk and changing the subject roughly every 3 sentences. "This is mega amazing. Totally unexpected. Saturday night, I'd have thought you had a meeting with Tokyo Council or something."
"Thank you for inviting me, Yamada-san," Toshinori said warmly, automatically inclining his head, and then laughing faintly as they trundled onward. Honestly, unless it's council business, I don't get out much. So I do appreciate the thought.
Hey, it's Hizashi! We're buddies, not co-workers, I told you!
Yamada scolded, abruptly grinning again when Toshinori put up his hands with a small smile, acceding with no true intention of making the swap. Call him old-fashioned, but given names were an intimacy, and one that two, albeit very intense, one-on-one conversations hadn't earned. He'd seen Aizawa naked and more, much more, and still stuttered at the thought of Shota. Unaware of any of this, present Mike fell into step beside him and preened, proud of himself for putting his stodgy co-worker straight.
Well, thanks for accepting my humble little invite, then. It's gonna be a great night. Two's company and three's a party, I say. You can tell me all about studying abroad in the old U.S. of A., and you can help me press this loser for details about his new boy toy.
Yamada crowed, nudging him conspiratorially in the arm. The voice hero looked over at Aizawa, the loser in question, with an impish glee, and whispered in English, with a spooky wriggle of his fingers,
"The vampire!"
"Mike?" Aizawa said stiffly, automatically annoyed. Toshinori startled for more than one reason, and looked uncertainly between the two pro heroes, as Yamada flapped his arms, gesturing in a million directions.
"What? Hey, hey! It looks like you're lucky to still have your head, yo! It's all right there! You're wearing your hair up and everything! Look, I know you're a fully licensed pervert, but are you an exhibitionist too? Keep us out of it, man!"
"Shut up, it's too hot not to." Aizawa grumbled, ducking his head somewhat and putting a hand to the back of his neck. Hellishly confused by the entire exchange, and not a little bit nervous, Toshinori followed the simple motion with his eyes, only to choke on his own tongue as Aizawa palmed morosely over a bruise vaguely the size of his own teeth, a lurid, blossoming purple half-moon. It wouldn't have been half as bad if Aizawa hadn't shot him a split-second look under his lashes. An amused and sultry thing that nearly sent Toshinori to his knees in the middle of the street. Shit! He was the boy toy. Was he the boy toy? Was he allowed to be a boy toy at his age? Insides in turmoil, scandalous secret intensified a thousandfold by memories of pawing at the man in front of him, naked in a dripping, darkened sauna. Toshinori struggled to hold his coughing at bay and stay upright as they walked along. Unfortunately, Yamada had no intention of letting him do either. Perhaps realizing that he had some juicy interpersonal leverage with the symbol of peace at his elbow, the voice hero immediately sidled up to him, looped an arm around his long neck with an expression both dubious and conspiratorial, whispering at an earth-shattering level that only he was capable of,
"Dude, seriously, look at his neck! Ka-fucking-chomp! He almost got a chunk taken out of him! Probably lucky to be alive!"
Then, adamantly, to Aizawa and the residential street at large,
"I'm worried about you. Hey, you have bad taste in rude men, Sho. I bet Yagi would never bite anyone like that. Would you, Yagi-san? Huh?"
"Mike," Aizawa snapped, glaring daggers when Toshinori's only response was to double over out of the hold and shake with a rapid-fire volley of coughs, hand clapping over his mouth to stop the glut of hot blood in his throat from spilling over. He was going to stain his shirt, he thought, head spinning. Should he excuse himself and go back home before he stained Aizawa's reputation as well?
"Come on! Tell us something about the mystery man and we'll quit!"
Yamada was whining above him, rocking back and forth aggressively in his studded boots. His boots were the only part Toshinori could see of him, bent into as he was, with his eyes brimming with tears from coughing. Yamada then stalked over to his best friend until his chin was almost on Aizawa's shoulder, glaring, and Aizawa curtly smacked him in the stomach with the back of his hand.
There's no we, idiot. Yagi-san isn't doing anything. You invited him, and now you're upsetting him. He said, with clear reproach, vengefully tugging one of Yamada's sparkly zippers down to the nub.
For a radio host, you're bad with guests.
What? Oh, damn, are you embarrassed? Mike exclaimed, looking back at Toshinori with genuine shock.
Repentant, he waved his hand anxiously as he automatically re-zipped himself.
Sorry, I guess our brash talk isn't something you're used to, Yagi-san. We teachers aren't very classy, it's true. Call it stress of the job. Gotta get your freak out sometime. Just not in front of the kids, huh?
So you don't care about embarrassing me? Aizawa muttered under his breath, only to have Hizashi pounce on him, one arm around his neck.
Are you kidding? It's a treasured UA pastime. Yagi, you should be included. He's going to be part of the family, he shouted joyfully, waggling Aizawa close and then reaching over and flipping his nose with a finger, something that Toshinori would never have done in a million years.
Aizawa's eye twitched, but Yamada just leaned into his neck, weaseling closer with an enormous pout.
I mean it, though. If you told us just a little bit more about your daily doings, my dude, maybe we wouldn't have to make up such wild stories about what you get up to. Ever considered that?
Nothing to tell, Aizawa said in low tones, grabbing the arm around his neck and holding it there, and decisively moving them forward again.
Hizashi was beaming, looking very excited to be leaning on his best friend and wandering down the street arm in arm.
Slowly watching the two of them and realizing the threat of exposure was gone for the moment, Toshinori found himself smiling a little.
What's the band, if I can ask?
Toshinori interjected after a few streets of walking and listening to Yamada's poeticisms on the job of an MC. If just because he felt like he should say something. He was still on edge, very aware of the pre-existing dynamic of the two younger heroes, and unknowing of how he fit into that on several levels, the bite mark aside. So he settled for between and vaguely behind, just to stay out of the way.
If you could ask? Aizawa shot him a disappointed look.
Like he had the right to know what he had been invited to, but was quickly steamrolled by his best friend and his irresponsible enthusiasm. Yamada spun on his heel and started walking backwards, just to talk to Toshinori, leather squeaking as he gestured expansively.
Indecent proposal, my man! You're in for a treat tonight. They're an alt-rock band that pulls influences from America and South Korea. It's really banging stuff. And they've been making good music for, like, years. Or decades? Not to age us or anything. But it's actually how me and Shota met.
Aizawa snorted loudly, as pointed as a hand to the face. And his friend knew it. If anything, Yamada seemed like he was waiting for it. And instantly protested, never slowing down his backwards gait.
It super is. We both love it. It was our freaking beginning.
He looked over at Toshinori, eyebrows waggling.
It's the truth. He heard them and bam, we started talking. Instant connection. Like magic.
He came up to me with his headphones on. He started talking. Aizawa relayed over his shoulder, voice dull. Then he turned his portable speakers on and wouldn't shut up about how great they were. He followed me around until fourth period. I didn't even know his name.
I did not, and you did too!
Yamada protested, superpowered voice swinging upward and no less cutting for the a cappella. Neither hero had brought their gear that night, which was a statement in and of itself. Toshinori twitched at the sound, a hand to his ear and a sheepish smile already on his face. But he shouldn't have bothered. Still walking backward, Yamada pointed aggressively at his best friend, finger a centimeter away from his nose.
But you do, Yamada insisted. Like it, I mean, you do.
I do, Aizawa acceded,
A joyless affair. Perhaps as easy to please as Aizawa was difficult to coerce, the simple admission seemed to be a victory for Yamada. His frustration evaporated instantly, letting out an excited whoop. The voice hero then hopped and swooped around and bumped up against Toshinori's side, once more slinging an arm around his long neck with an easy grin.
You see, this is a pretty apt metaphor for our relationship, Yagi-san, he mused, smoothing over his delicate and meticulously groomed mustache with a single finger. He may deny it, he may say differently, or maybe fluster about how it happened, but I know he fucking loves this band, and it makes his life.
Ahead of them, Aizawa looked back just enough to let them see him roll his eyes. Perfectly accurate. Now can we go in, since you talked us right up to the damn door? Toshinori looked up with a start, realizing they were a few doors down from a low brick building with blinking lights out front, tucked in a more urban part of Musutafu that he'd never seen before. That wasn't saying much, as little as he knew the district, but he still had to brace himself as the two younger heroes led the way through the front door, which he had to duck to fit himself through. The rabble inside hit them instantly and roared louder still when Mike's trademark, "Hey, listeners!" broke over the crowd and was met with a deafening, joyful cheer. The sheer noise level stunned Toshinori for a moment, but once they started moving, he was impressed with the easy way Mike flowed from person to person, chattering and warmly grabbing hands, glowing and grinning. It was easy to feel the excitement and the true respect that followed him like a wave in the crowd. Even if he wasn't in the top 100 as far as hero rankings went, it was clear he was beloved here. In contrast, Aizawa looked distinctly uncomfortable and hid in his loose hair, shoulders hunched, until they made their way up to the second floor of the industrial performance hall, where the DJ area was.
"You're getting in special, 'cause you're with me," Yamada crowed, flashing them a thumbs up as he dashed up the peeling concrete steps. "They'll roll out the carpet, you'll see."
"More like roll out the police tape," Aizawa muttered under his breath, slogging up the stairs after him and picking his way over the rope at the top. The speed at which Yamada turned made Toshinori think maybe the man had super hearing as well, or if he had to balance his quirk.
"It's not that bad a part of town, dude,"
Mike whined, kicking the DJ booth open. Aizawa just shook his head, clearly grateful to shut himself in to the sheltered booth, away from the crowd, and lean against the back wall with a stilted sigh. Toshinori gingerly propped himself up on a stool that Yamada offered him with a flourish, and then watched as the voice hero pored over the soundboard, glowing in the dark, long fingers flicking and waving and testing. The curious double whirl of his green irises seemed to constrict and zoom wide behind his green lenses as he worked, his tongue poking out between his perfectly straight teeth.
"We're ready, set, loaded, oh!"
Yamada chanted, tapping his foot and then whirling around with his arms raised high. Approximately 30 zippers waggled in the low light, and Toshinori was struck once again by how many moving parts the man seemed to have.
"And we've still got 10 minutes to blow. It's a show business miracle, heroes."
"So stop blowing it, idiot," Aizawa said pointedly, giving his friend an impatient look and, even more of a mystery, pinching his fingers in a demanding gesture. Yamada gave a short "ha!" of a laugh and raised a finger with a supremely knowing look, then started fishing around in his millions of jacket pockets. Toshinori couldn't help but stare as Yamada finally emerged with a roll of paper and, twisting the end tightly, lit it with a discarded lighter he found in the booth. Lips pursed, he puffed briefly to extinguish the flame and inspected his work, brow furrowed, then inhaled deeply.
Eyes wide, Toshinori looked to Aizawa, who was watching his friend's antics, but for an entirely different reason. As Yamada inhaled, the underground hero extended a hand and snapped his fingers. Come on, damn, finally. Aizawa muttered, taking the blunt from him the moment his friend was done and taking a slow, sipping drag of his own. Eyes closed. You cool, Yagi-san? Mike asked with a mouthful of smoke, then smiled awkwardly while trying to keep most of it in. He coughed a little. We're not, offending your sense of justice, are we?
No, no, not at all, Toshinori said hurriedly, waving a hand.
He was a bit spooked, admittedly, but it was the truth. He was more worried about the smoke itself than anything, but he would move if it started to interfere with his breathing, and he didn't quite want to telegraph that concern just yet. He smiled as kindly as he could at Yamada, who looked uncommonly perturbed at being judged on a heroic level by the symbol of peace.
Your secret is safe with me, remember?
Yamada blinked up at him and then grinned again, radiating simple gentleness.
Thanks, big guy, he gushed,
then grunted as Aizawa poked him in the side, prompting him to take the blunt back.
Just tell me if you need to open a window or step out,
Aizawa said, giving him a look. Toshinori didn't know if he was imagining the little bit of sternness in his voice, and so didn't think about how it made him feel, which was good. Like he had a way out if he needed it, now that he was paying a little more attention to what he wanted and didn't want. He didn't have to endure around Aizawa, and that was something extraordinary. Standing there, knowing that, his morning felt so very far away, and a small smile warmed his face.
Hey, Yagi can join in the fun if he wants, Mike exclaimed,
and Toshinori waved his hand instinctively, retreating a little further in the booth, and sitting himself on the stool again to watch and take in the atmosphere of the mounting party. The venue was small but lively, to be sure. It seemed to fit present Mike's general vibe, and clearly it wasn't his first time emceeing there. The brick building was dark and warm, a little humid, and black lights made painted shapes on the wall pop out in caustic oranges and pinks. People were starting to push together, closer to each other and closer to the stage, but it was friendly and organic and brimming with excitement. Crowds brought up odd feelings for Toshinori. But this was fine. This was good, even. New.
Man, this is the good shit, though.
Mike crooned, obliviously, when the joint had traveled between him and Aizawa a few times. He was back at the soundboard with his gloved hands out and tracing electric waves in the air, the leaking blunt tucked under his thumb.
It's a mellow high with a smooth finish. Just a little bit of a buzz. Minimal skunk. Perfect balance. Just enough to get you there, huh? Yeah.
Is this your brand? Stop trying to sell it to him, idiot.
Aizawa snorted. But when Toshinori looked up, the underground hero wasn't focused on Yamada, but on him. Expression distinctly amused. As if wondering what he would do, or could do. Toshinori gulped, hoping his co-teacher didn't know exactly what effect that appraising look had. But in the end, it was a hopeless effort to pretend nonchalance. It was Saturday, wasn't it? A good time to make foolish decisions in safe company.
May I?
Toshinori said, far too quickly, hating it the second it was out of his mouth. How could he be so awkward, so formal? He was from a different generation, and it showed in neon hues in that moment, more garish and obvious than the blacklight paint marring the walls. Mike just laugh-coughed, clearly delighted by his attempted roguishness. Leaning back from his equipment, he immediately handed the joint over, but Aizawa intercepted and snagged it from between them.
No.
Toshinori looked up at him,
utterly confused and a little affronted. He was an adult, after all. But his mind blanked with fantastic speed when Aizawa put a calloused hand to his bare forearm, businesslike, and held his gaze. The firm, warm touch made lights go up his arm, and Toshinori's breath caught helplessly in his throat. "Do you actually want to, or is this idiot peer-pressuring you?" "I would never do that!" Hizashi gasped behind them, scandalized. "That would be mighty uncool!" It took him a second, but Toshinori recognized the phrase from an old educational video he'd made maybe 10 years ago about peer pressure and bullying. And the veteran hero immediately felt his face go painfully red in the dark. He looked at the concrete floor. It was extraordinarily sticky. This was all extraordinarily sticky, he thought with some regret. He probably shouldn't have come. "Mike, we've talked about how fucking awkward it is when you do that," Aizawa said flatly, then returned his full attention to Toshinori, solidly ignoring the indignant "Excuse me!" behind them. Aizawa inclined his head and raised the little smoking stub of paper between them, clearly asking again. Toshinori paused, then nodded. "Green," he wanted to say, but the thought just made his face even hotter, and suddenly he just wanted to focus on surviving a fun night with two cool, gracious young heroes. It was harder than it sounded, especially when one of them was too bold for his own good. "When I breathe out, you breathe in." Aizawa bent close and tapped his cheek. "Open." Aizawa said it like Toshinori knew what in the world he was talking about. He didn't. He didn't, that is, until he very much did. The younger hero drew deeply from the blunt and held it, the faintest smirk on his face as he leaned in and pulled at his arm, leading him up to meet him. Toshinori followed, paralyzed and vibrating with the burning need to look away and the squirming desire to sway closer. And the idea clicked just as Aizawa angled his mouth, dangerously close, and blew gentle and steady into his open mouth. The smoke was warm but not hot, and a good deal likely escaped in the transfer, but it was enough to send Toshinori's head spinning deliriously as he breathed in, his ribs expanding with a tangible, wary creak. He didn't know how long he craned upward like that with his lips just below Aizawa's, every bit of him vibrating blissfully. But he had to make himself pull away, a hand instinctively covering his mouth. The grainy feeling of the smoke coating his throat, and Toshinori coughed faintly. Suddenly, twice as hot as before, especially with Aizawa's hand still on his arm, just heavy and calloused and there, holding him down and in his body in the most sensual way. "Well, shit show, what would Boy Toy say?" Mike admonished, as if from 1,000 miles away. But when the older hero looked, Yamada's expression was part surprised and part amused. The voice hero grandly waved his hand. Not at all the reaction Toshinori expected when faced with such a strange display between co-workers.
"Yagi-san, if he gets too frisky, just let me know. I know how to handle him. He doesn't mean anything by it. He's just desperate."
"Fuck you," Aizawa choked out, around a weak cough, actually grinning. He looked down at Toshinori, brows high and eyes already a little glassy. "No matter what he says, don't get near his mouth." Toshinori glanced back over at Yamada, intensely confused and wondering what, exactly, their outings consisted of. Aizawa already had an intimate, passionate, yet unconventional relationship with Kayama, and it made him wonder just how out of tune he was with modern dating habits that he could be looking at yet another of Aizawa's paramours. Partners? Family? And not know it. I'm not allowed to shotgun, Mike confessed instead, surly, leaning his hip against the soundboard and tapping his boot heel on the sticky floor. Because? Aizawa prompted him in low tones, thick gluts of smoke slipping from his curling lips. Mike took the blunt from him with a giggle, pretending to think.
Because of that time I coughed in your mouth.
And I couldn't talk for a fucking week, Aizawa muttered, shrugging hair out of his eyes and blinking blearily. One of your coughs is like getting fisted in the throat. Mike's giggle upgraded to a guffaw, so much so that he couldn't take another drag, and Aizawa swiftly liberated it from him, shooting Toshinori a look that said, "Do you see this idiot?" Toshinori saw. He definitely saw and heard. Everyone heard, he expected.
But Shota, the smoke is hot on my throat, and what can I do without my voice?
Mike whined, now hanging ragdoll on Aizawa's arm, who bore his wiggling and thrashing with expert stoicism. A favor for all of us. Aizawa looked over, just to puff smoke in Mike's face, who snorted. Do all of us a fucking favor.
Meow! What's up with the sass, man? I thought you were getting that fucked out of you. Do I need to tell Boy Toy to up the ante, or what?
You can't fuck evil away, apparently. With that, Mike erupted with laughter that briefly threatened to shake the DJ booth apart at the hinges. The two heroes leaned back and chuckled together, squirming to see who could get their elbow into the other's ribs first. They were clearly thick as thieves, but they were also playing for him. Toshinori thoroughly enjoyed their show and found himself smiling warmly as he watched them carouse in the small booth, able to relax and enjoy each other in what was clearly a rare circumstance of peace. For an unexpected friendship that had caused him so much confusion at first, it looked so smooth in motion, and Toshinori finally saw how the two of them, the bubbly rock star and the grim, practical disciplinarian, fit together. It produced a spectacularly lovely, comforting feeling, to know that Aizawa had someone who loved him so intensely, and in such a particular way. The ambassador of the Shota Squad, he remembered, and his dreamy smile widened. Toshinori didn't feel like a third wheel, necessarily, but he was feeling some particularly strange things. Half of them were left over from Aizawa's mouth being so close to his, the other half due to the tingling fullness in his remaining lung that was seeping into a giddy, dislocated feeling, warming his long body piece by piece. He could feel the rough pads of his fingers far away, at the end of the nerve tunnel that was his arm, and fretted at the edge of his pressed shirt for a while, feeling, echoing. He'd plainly never gotten to do this when he was young, even in America, even in university, and there was a draw to it that made him foolish. He shouldn't take another drag, he told himself. Shouldn't almost kiss Aizawa in front of his best friend, who definitely didn't know they kissed. But he hadn't even considered the second-hand smoke filling the booth. Yamada offered the joint to him again a few minutes later, grinning and looking absolutely thrilled to have the symbol of peace getting stoned in his general vicinity. But Aizawa immediately smacked his hand down. His cough, he said sharply, gesturing down to him so quickly Toshinori's eyes crossed. I don't want to have to call an ambulance. Shit, Mike.
Aw, shit,
he repeated, waving his hands with a barking laugh.
Sorry, mighty boy.
Mike. Watch your mouth, idiot. We aren't in the staff room.
Oh, no! Damn! I'm really on a roll here. Somebody stop me before I go off the ledge and crowd surf away.
Toshinori simply sat and held himself down to the chair as it all washed over him, deeply embarrassed, but possibly twice as pleased that Aizawa was fussing over him. It was a foreign concept, and it rolled around his head ticklishly, making him grin automatically when Aizawa pinned him with narrowed eyes. The message was spoken, but clear as day. No more. If you say so, he mumbled into his hand, distantly grateful for the excuse. Aizawa nodded, then gazed to the crowd as the noise rose and the lights went dim, the blunt leaking smoke between his scarred fingers. Too bad, though, he said suddenly, voice soft. It's good for relaxing, zoning out. Or zoning in! There was a thump and a squeal of feedback as Mike slapped his hands on the soundboard with a relish, opening the line to the rest of the club. Aizawa moved back, so he was standing next to Toshinori and put a finger to his lips. The show was starting. Grinning, green eyes flashing, Yamada's whole body bent as he howled into the standing microphone. Rockers of Musutafu, open your ears and gird your youthful loins for an indecent proposal! Are you ready? Judging by the instant shriek of noise, they were ready. And just like that, the industrial stage opened up with a flash of light and exultant guitar riffs. The music was good, but the show in their booth was even better. Toshinori's attention kept drifting from the tightly choreographed show on stage to Yamada, who was relentlessly and organically emceeing in between every song, adding in trivia and bantering with the band members with expertise. He was in his element, surrounded by music equipment and unbridled excitement, at a small venue where everyone was shouting, hooting, rejoicing, and very eager to answer his calls. It was pleasant and unexpectedly gratifying, and it amused Toshinori to no end to see such a busy hero able to let loose and enjoy himself in his crazy world. Even Aizawa was watching him bounce around on his tiptoes and holler through the microphone with a faint smile, pleased to see his best friend do what he loved. During an intermission, Aizawa was trying to put eye drops in his very red eyes, and Yamada took to poking him in the ribs right when he squeezed the dropper, giggling fitfully. Aizawa growled his name again and again, and was poked again and again, eye drops splattering everywhere but his eyes. Toshinori had to laugh aloud when Aizawa chucked the bottle and put Yamada in a headlock, folding him over and hissing what were certainly threats in his ear as the voice hero tried to escape amid infectious giggling and complaints about his hair getting trashed. There was love between them, to be certain. What kind of love? Toshinori hadn't realized there were so many kinds of love and couldn't wipe the smile from his face. It was only when he tried to and couldn't, and then saw thin, fizzling colors bleeding off of Yamada and Aizawa's entangled silhouettes, that he realized he could be very fucked up indeed. Personal awareness suddenly blowing wide outside of his body, Toshinori sat as still as he could on the stool. He drew his limbs in. Far away, someone was saying his name. But he only put the pieces together when a hand touched his shoulder. Toshinori? Oh my, he said immediately, his words on a 5-second delay. Oh, shit. Oh man, he's fucked, Mike giggled from very far away. Toshinori, squeeze my hand if you're okay. Came Aizawa's voice in his ear, sending trusting tingles rushing down his arms. He nodded, untucked his arm. He grabbed for Aizawa's hand and was pretty sure he held, squeezed, let go. He definitely had to let go. But what if he didn't? They would be holding hands then. Holding hands with Aizawa was a thing he wanted to do. Toshinori turned the idea over. Stripped of the crust of worry and guilt, thanks to the sheer amount of sweet smoke clogging his usual highways of thought. He certainly wanted to hold Aizawa's hand, but with his entire self, and the contradiction in terms was oddly hilarious to him. Unable to help himself, Toshinori started laughing and laughing, giddiness bowling him over again and again in dense, irresistible waves, until he was holding his head and fighting for breath.
Oh, that's cute! He's got the giggles! Miss Chiyo is gonna kill us!
Another thick exhalation, expanding out, a laugh.
Damn, do you think this stuff's really gotten so strong since he was on the scene?
Mike, do you honestly think he's ever been on the scene?
Ah, true. A paragon of virtue as always, my man. We are super duper fucking dead.
You have bad ideas. Oh, he could feel the vibration of Aizawa's voice when it went so deep and indulgent and... Oh. Suddenly back in his body, Toshinori swayed on the spot, consumed with the urge to lean up and take Aizawa's scruffy chin and kiss him, touch his tongue to that deep vibration. But he couldn't find his limbs. That was a good thing, probably.
I have the terriblest ideas,
Mike agreed, sounding incredibly proud of himself.
Worry about it tomorrow,
came Aizawa's mutter, and Toshinori hummed appreciatively as he felt a warm hand on his back, and the younger hero settled beside him, a physical anchor in a deeply foreign world of colorful lights and rich darkness and hypnotic beats. The stage opened up again. There was so much joyful rabble, and so much of it layered with the enthusiastic cheers of the crowd, that a huge slamming sound almost went unnoticed. Then, again, after the particularly dull boom of a body against old brick, under the music, under the shouts, the pitch of the screams changed and the crowd scrambled and parted. Toshinori, on his 5-second delay, and pleasantly struggling to keep his cottony head up, was oblivious until the far wall of the club erupted in a shower of brick and mortar, the impact rocking the entire building and rattling every metal screw and pipe. What the? Far away on the stage, instruments cut out or hit the stage and sent feedback shrieking into the dust-choked air. And Toshinori gasped, suddenly struggling to breathe against an immense, sharp pressure on his chest. He tensed blindly, straining against the wall at his back, shaky breathing filling his ear, along with an infinitely recognizable curse as another crashing sound split the panic. Voices rang out below.
Get him! Get back here, you little shit! You're fucking dead! Aw, man, not again!
The last one was familiar, near and very upset. Mike! Aizawa yelled, right in his ear. Toshinori flinched down to his emptying bones, from the blast of anger and closeness, still trying to figure out why the hero had knocked him off his stool and against the wall and was shielding his body with his own. Aizawa's loose hair rustled against his cheek, and his raised hand trembled in the vibrating air above their tangled bodies, torn between grabbing a handful of Aizawa's shirt and holding on, and shoving him out of the way to leap down into the crowd and the panic and the fight that he hadn't even begun to understand. Mike, get him out of here, Aizawa's voice said, and Toshinori could only grit his teeth and fling his hands out for balance as he was dragged up by his shirt and shoved against something else. His palms met with leather and his head spun viciously, throat fused shut. Something like nausea twisted his insides, which he hadn't felt in earnest since he'd lost his stomach. Tell the crowd to head to the back. I'll run suppression.
All right, fine. I'll be back, okay?
More hands grabbed him, pulled him close.
Show, okay?
Okay, yes, so fucking move. Hands grabbed his own and pressed them over his ears, and they plunged in. Mike, it was Mike, it had to be, with the leather and the cologne, yelled at everyone to go, go.
and whisked him down the stairs, practically carrying his stiff, pitifully unresponsive body as they forded three steps at a time. They hauled down and forward through the bodies, shoving past them, the constant smacking barrage of shoulders and hands almost sending Toshinori to his rubbery knees more than once. But there was Mike's fist in his shirt and his arm around his back, yanking him up and forward and through. Another explosion rocked the building. Still, the party lights flashed sickeningly, and all Toshinori could see, in lagging flipbook spasms, were his own narrow brown leather shoes staggering over concrete and stuck gum and scattered chunks of brick. There was a roaring in his ears, his body, and it was hard to say how much was fear and how much was his own breath scraping out of his open mouth and bouncing off the sweaty press of his palms over his ears. They burst through a door, and the chaos was abruptly sealed away by a layer of concrete, leaving Toshinori inundated by gasping, pounding heartbeats. The arms around him lowered him to the floor, against a wall, and he protested, or he thought he did, and a second later there was a squeak of leather in front of him, and a warm, smoke-sweet breath on his face. "Hey, big guy, sorry about that mad dash, are you?" Hands patted his shoulders, coaxing him back against the wall instead of forward, up, where his numb body wanted to go. His bones burned, his fingers clutched and pulled. "Okay, nope, no way, you're not gonna go back out there. You stay here and don't worry about a thing, Yagi-san. Me and Eraser, we've got this, okay?" Toshinori tried to speak, and his throat was still blocked, this time by a painful lump. No, he didn't understand. He felt Yamada peeling his fingers off of his jacket front and murmuring more assurances as the hero folded his dislocated limbs in over his raised knees, before rising and running off. The empty air where he had been was suddenly dangerous, and Toshinori recoiled from it, elbows and fingers and toes folding in. A second later, just enough time to draw a shuddering breath in the small, dark cave between his knees and arms, footsteps slapped up to meet him again. "So, really, it's not a bad part of town. This is an exception, okay? Really, like, really. It's probably just those stupid gangs, and it's only happened 5 times since I started turning here. It's really not that bad. So, yeah, hang tight." The door swung open and shut, and Toshinori flinched from the burst of clear panic and screaming, and then shuddered in the quiet, folded body effortlessly carrying the vibrations of every scream on the other side of the wall. He tried to find his body, himself, shaking hands groping over his hollowed cheeks and brow. He was coated with cold sweat. He couldn't breathe. The air was too hot, too thick. And when he tried to think about Aizawa and Yamada on the other side of the wall, another explosion shook the concrete and threw him back somewhere in his mind. They had collapsed the building and he was pinned. Dark, small, the dust was so thick he couldn't draw breath, and that was without the pillar crushing his ribs. His mind choked with shadows from lack of air and the fall. Such a fall. 10 floors at the least. He couldn't move fast enough. He had tried to do too many things at once and failed at everything. He spat something thick and hot out of his mouth, and a raw noise of pain erupted from his open throat, the thickly corded muscle of his entire body spasming. Concrete blocked him in from every side, and a stinging sensation rose out of the shock into his flank and across his back. Wet or pain, he couldn't tell. But a twisted steel girder split the dark in front of his face, like a crack in the air itself. The dark gleam of it was the only thing his grayed vision could pick out, and he knew it was blood the second his sense of smell came back and flooded him with copper and tar and smoke. Sobbing, someone was crying, filling the small, fractured space with cries, and it was not the person at his feet whose limp hand was running with dark streaks and dripping into the rubble. He heard it through the dark, and his heart rotted in his trapped chest. He had to get out. He had to save them. He heard them screaming now, begging for help, but his ears were still ringing, and it sounded so far away, and his body wouldn't move. His body had to move. It was all he had, all they had, and Yagi Toshinori reached down and tore up whatever he could get his bloodied hands on, any shard of light that remained within himself, because he was needed, and he would burn it all to save them. Caught under a building 7 years away, his breath punched through him faster and faster to meet the paralyzing crush of concrete and screams. When something slammed into his shoulders, every piece of Toshinori slammed back. Instinct knifed through the veteran hero's body as he lunged up to his knees, grabbing fistfuls of fabric. In the same motion, he threw the body 180 degrees, turning on his heel and slamming them into the wall with his forearm across their throat. He pressed and sucked in air, skin burning, back bent as the static cleared from his eyes, and he heard it. Oh, might. All might. Someone calling for help. They needed All Might. He reached in, frozen, crouching over that body with panic and need vying. Toshinori felt down and pulled at the light in his bones. But all that came back was a ringing numbness and emptiness. He pushed and pulled and nothing, and the pain and frustration broke from his bloodied mouth as a dirty sob. Toshinori! Why couldn't he do it? Had he lost already? Where was it? Where was he? Toshi, look at me. He opened his eyes. Aizawa was sprawled beneath him and pinned to the wall by his neck. Nose bloodied, eyes wide. His dark hair streamed upward, dreamily, writhing against the concrete as if in slow motion. And his irises burned, and his soot-stained hand was motionless on the pitifully thin arm crushing his neck. It's over. His Adam's apple bumped at Toshinori's forearm as he tried to swallow. Speak. Toshinori's wide eyes were locked on his bloodied lips and the shapes they made. The civilians have been taken to safety. It's over, All Might. It's okay. His name woke him, but those simple words unearthed a grief so great that his body still wanted to press forward. Crush. Stop. He didn't want to hear that. No one should have to say that to him. And the last of the tension in Toshinori snapped. He drove his fist into the concrete to their right with all his might, and the impact vibrated up his hollow bones, leaving him with nothing. An anguished noise erupted from his raw throat. Pain or confusion, it didn't matter. Nothing. He collapsed onto the hero in front of him and was unable to stifle a sob as his forehead hit Aizawa's shoulder, and a hot hand held him there, fumbling over the back of his sweaty neck.
Oh no, oh shit, fuck,
came a voice behind them, high and rasping.
Holy fuck, Sho, are you okay?
Mike, Aizawa's voice was hard and tired. We've called the police. They're on their way. We've done our part, but I need you to do something for me, Toshinori. I can't, Toshinori breathed, confessed, his aching hand uncurling from a fist, dribbling down the wall. The only places his body existed were the pressure against Aizawa's shoulder and the hand around his neck. If he moved, he would fall apart, and his smallest parts curled up and clenched, begging for traction in a fragmenting world where he could fall back beneath that building, but no longer have the strength to escape. He would die there, in his own dark. The very thought made his body a tomb, and he choked on his own blood, fighting for breath against the hole in his side. I can't. His body, his mind, and heart all sobbed it in chorus, but Aizawa's hand tightened on the back of his neck. Yes, you can, Aizawa told him, low and firm, allowing no argument. You're high as shit. We need to get you back down, and now.
I have something for that, if you open your mouth. There was a hand on his cheek, lifting his head, but Toshinori kept his eyes squeezed shut. He had to. He didn't want to see Aizawa, didn't want to see the deadly pity in his face when he finally realized he'd been pandering to a broken man, and there was nothing to save. Then, the voice in his ear, soft, so soft it made his throat close again. Come on, Toshi, take a deep, slow breath, and open your mouth for me. I can help. Trust me. It stopped the senseless flutter of his mind, quieting him on the knife's edge of an order. He trusted Aizawa. Toshinori made himself still and fill his lungs with air, and opened his mouth, jaw creaking. He heard the clatter of plastic and something sprayed hard and wet onto his tongue. Bitter flavor flooded his tongue and he gagged, clapping a hand over his mouth, coughing quietly as he was pressed down again into Aizawa's shoulder. He found Aizawa's torn t-shirt in the dark between them and held on. Yamada and Aizawa spoke in low tones above his swimming head, and Toshinori miserably focused on breathing, following the rhythmic rise of the younger hero's chest. And, like syrup, the sweet, terrible smoke drained from his head, too quickly to be healthy or correct. His mind opened back up, and suddenly everything stung, bright and clean like peppermint. He raised his head, and it felt like his pupils were carved into his eyes, every light stabbing into the ground meat of his brainstem. You good? Aizawa asked when Toshinori precariously pulled away, one hand to his head. His hand, Mike said behind them, voice thick. My hand, he rasped, as if in agreement, lowering it from his forehead and looking it over. He may have broken some part of it in punching the wall, even if he couldn't feel it yet. Blood was streaming down from wet, open welts on his knuckles. A small thing. He watched glassily as Aizawa reached down and shredded his already ruined shirt into strips, then wrapped it deftly around his craggy hand, nodding over his busted knuckles. As he did so, dark blood dribbled down from his battered nose and onto his thinned lip, and in a trance, Toshinori barely stopped himself from reaching out and wiping it away with his thumb. Their secret, he remembered, and suddenly wanted to crumble and disappear into the dirty air. They couldn't leave immediately. It was important for Yamada and Aizawa to give their statements to the police. Those in the area knew the two of them well, so it helped speed up the process and cut the usual formalities. But Aizawa would be the first one to insist that full and proper testimony helped keep the story and the law straight so the criminals could end up where they belonged. It went like this. A young gang member was fleeing from a rival gang after stealing something. His quirk allowed him to jump through solid objects, and it went without saying that he wasn't licensed to use it. So he illegally barreled through the cityscape, phasing from building to building, most of them empty, and eventually stumbled into the club. The rival gang followed with equally illegal momentum and explosion-based quirks. The band was unharmed, most of the injuries were from falling debris, and two known pro-heroes were able to subdue the clash and call in the proper authorities. Yagi Toshinori, All Might's secretary attending the club for personal entertainment purposes only, was pulled away from the rabble by pro-hero present Mike, and could confirm their half of the story to a fault. The injury on his hand was from a fall, no attempt to fight. With both the remnants of the drug and the bitter counter-drug fighting it out of his head, it was both too long and too quickly before his co-workers came to gather Toshinori from the sidewalk. They walked stiffly and in silence, the colorful flashing lights that had begun the night reduced to relentless, dangerous red and blue. Toshinori's uninjured hand was clawed around his collar, holding it closed around his throat, like it would keep him in and together while they walked away from the scene.
Soon it was nothing but their footsteps and the sidewalk. The urban landscape melted away to suburbs above the steady meter of their shoes on the ground. Toshinori knew he shouldn't flinch when Mike touched his arm, because he saw it happening. But flinch he did. It felt like a betrayal and a shout of his deep weakness, and it made him turn away.
"Geez, Yagi, I'm really sorry, man. I didn't..."
Toshinori just shook his head and kept walking, eyes stinging from more than just smoke. A distant part of him knew he should say the right thing and absolve his fellow hero and co-worker. But he couldn't speak for the lump in his throat, and he wasn't about to try. His limbs hurt from tensing and from struggling against Aizawa's erasure to transform. The feeling of reaching and feeling nothing hurt even more, haunted his aching chest, and chased every shuddering breath. He heard Aizawa murmuring behind him, low and firm, presumably correcting or soothing his friend. He hated it when people talked under their breaths around him. He hated having to sign Yagi Toshinori, and hated signing under witness. He couldn't stop shaking. He hated shaking. Eventually, approaching campus, they reached a branching point in the road, which would have taken Yamada and Toshinori in one direction and Aizawa in another. Toshinori turned automatically, recognizing the area and desperate for any familiarity, but stopped, flinched again, when he felt a light tap on his shoulder. "Hey," Aizawa said as he turned, expression unreadable, underneath his dusty, tangled hair, which had fallen from his updo and was dotted with concrete shrapnel. His dark eyes were dull in the lamplight, but held his gaze steadily, and that was some kind of comfort. Aizawa tilted his head to the side and his part of town.
"Walk as far as my place."
Toshinori couldn't think, he just nodded. The two friends parted with short goodbyes and a promise to call later, and Toshinori couldn't return or even comprehend the beseeching glance Yamada sent him before turning and heading his own way, crested head low. He fell into step beside Aizawa and just walked and walked. He followed Aizawa through the dark until they reached the intersection right before his apartment. It was where they found Shinzo playing with a cat that one day, and Toshinori was sad to see how empty it looked in the dark, sketched out in warped shadows from the streetlights. Even the little gardens were just pits of shadow, and Toshinori stopped right before the curb, frozen at the edge of the road that led to Aizawa's complex. The night around him was too wide, too exposed. He had to leave. He had to go back to his apartment and shut himself in. He didn't know what he would do there, but he couldn't be here. Something would snap, something he wouldn't be able to fix. In front of him, Aizawa stopped and turned.
"You don't have to be alone right now,"
Aizawa said quietly, searching for his eyes.
"Not if you don't want to be."
Toshinori shook his head and pulled his collar closed again, determinedly avoiding his gaze.
"I don't want to trouble you,"
he murmured, nearly panting from the effort it took to form slow, miserable words, or stand still long enough to say them when he wanted to run away, out of the street.
"You're not."
Aizawa was speaking too quickly for him, for his scorched mind, and his throat squeezed painfully. Why did they invite him? Why did an act of kindness or pity have to end like this? Shame bubbled up to the back of the older hero's throat, 1,000 times more bitter than whatever the damn spray was. "I ruined your night. It's better if I just..."
"Those assholes ruined our night. Don't take that blame,"
Aizawa corrected him, curt, and Toshinori felt fingers at his wrist.
"Let me rephrase that. I don't think you should be alone right now, Toshi."
His world swayed. That hypnotically firm tone, the name, the hand on his wrist. It took him somewhere when he was already barely grounded in his shoes on the sidewalk. It invited him to stop struggling, to give up.
But to give up meant to be helpless, and everything in his life said he couldn't be helpless right then. His skin was too raw from fear and struggle. The night around them too wide and dark, and his wrist was terrifyingly thin in Aizawa's grip. It would be a kind of death of who he was, of who he used to be. So Toshinori flinched away in white-hot panic, yanking his arm free. "Don't," he spat, suddenly furious at the attempted coercion and angrier still at how he wanted to lean into it. He stood apart, shaking and scrabbling for what remained of his ruined body. No matter how thin and weak, every alarm going off, resist, resist. His teeth were clenched hard enough to crack. "Don't do that. Not now. This isn't respectful," he said, low and bitter. "You think I haven't dealt with this before. Don't talk down to me or try to herd me somewhere like a child. I am not one of your students, and I will not be controlled like one." He tried to leave. He turned and tried, and his body bounced on the yoke of what had to be Aizawa's fist in his sleeve. "Hey, I'm not trying to fucking control you." Toshinori whirled with automatic anger on his lips, only to freeze at the sight of the man holding him in place. Aizawa was pale, and there was blood on his lip, and his t-shirt was torn up from the bottom, and there was blood on that as well. It could be his, it could not. His capture weapon was visible through the red-stained shreds, wound haphazardly around his middle underneath the shirt. He'd brought it after all. Or maybe he just couldn't leave it at home. This close, he could feel Aizawa shaking. Sweat carved trails down the gray dust that layered his cheeks and forehead. Even as dark as his eyes were, in the street lamp, Toshinori could see the pupils were still gaping wide, like the hole punched in the side of the club. "That's not what I'm doing. What I'm asking you," Aizawa said carefully, through his own clenched teeth, "is if you feel safe right now." "Of course not." Toshinori couldn't force his voice above a whisper, and he hated it. Aizawa took a deep, shivering breath, eyes boring into his. "Then I'm asking you, one profoundly fucked up person to another, if you would feel any better getting through the rest of this awful night with another hero or just a friend." The last of the brittle anger in Toshinori crumpled and deflated, washed away by a sickening helplessness. It came, whether he wanted it to or not, choking him up. It didn't help that Aizawa's deep voice crunched piteously on the last word. Not through emotion, but because Toshinori had pinned him by the windpipe an hour earlier. For a moment, all he could do was stare at the sidewalk and their dirty shoes and hate himself. "Do you know what we do?" Aizawa pushed, suddenly louder. Toshinori was sure Aizawa was glaring at him, but he couldn't look. "Do you know what me and Mike and Nemuri do when we get out of something really fucked up? We go back to whoever's apartment is closest and pile in the same bed and sleep, so that when one of us wakes up and panics, we're not alone. There's someone there in that moment and waiting for us on the other side of the night." Toshinori didn't know what to say to that, and Aizawa wasn't going to give him space to try. "Do you think that's strange or shameful?" he demanded. "Sick, maybe?" "No," Toshinori said immediately, almost hurt. Piece by piece, he gathered the courage and the need to meet Aizawa's dark eyes again. "No, of course not." "Then why hold yourself to a stricter standard, Toshinori?" He couldn't help it. He flinched at his name, like he'd flinched to be touched. He thought, or tried to, but his mind kept coming up blank. "I've just never needed it before." "You've never done it before," Aizawa corrected him, merciless. He studied him intently for a moment, tilting his head. "So if you go, what's going to happen if you have a nightmare?" That stopped Toshinori in a way little else had. No one, in over 20 years of hero work, had ever assumed that he had nightmares. It just wasn't talked about. It didn't do to talk about it, and he never did. He couldn't imagine the kind of nightmares that Aizawa had, not after USJ, not after being undercover with the Triumvirate. "The same thing that always happens," he heard himself say, disgusted by how small and mournful he sounded. "I survive." "Try thriving," Aizawa said. "It's better in the long term. It leaves fewer scars." It was becoming a theme. Toshinori didn't know what to say to that. He just stared. And after a moment, Aizawa was the one to duck his head and sigh and give out. He tried to push his hair back, suddenly looking so exhausted he could hardly stand. "Look, my friends, they keep me alive. I couldn't do half the shit I do without them. I wouldn't be here without them. I'm allowed to say that. None of us survive very long alone. So I'm allowed to accept help. And so are you." "I've never had friends like that." It was all Toshinori could say, gutted by the truth of it. He'd had friends, yes. Deep friendships with David, Sir, and even now Masa. But not one of them knew what it was like to be trapped beneath a building and have that dark pressure follow them into sleep. "You do now," Aizawa corrected him for the umpteenth time, voice soft. He looked aside, a shadow of surrender on his pale, dust-smeared face. "Look, if you need to do it for me and not yourself, that's fine. Because I'm not going to lie to you. I don't want to be alone right now. I don't think either of us should be after something like that. And I got to fight through it. You didn't. That's harder." They stood across from each other for a moment in silence. And then Aizawa put his hand out, reaching for him, palm open. Not grasping or grabbing, but offering. "So come on, come inside, please." Aizawa motioned with his bloodied, soot-stained fingers, head hung low. "Spare me worrying about you on the way home." Looking at the hand outstretched in front of him, a distant part of Toshinori's heart ached. This wasn't how he wanted it to happen. But worse still, he would take it. It was a multitudinous surrender to reach out and place his battered, bandaged hand into Aizawa's palm. His eyes closed, stung, as the man's scarred fingers gently wrapped around his own and tugged. Toshinori let himself be led out of the street and the dangerous open air. Aizawa didn't let go of his hand all the way up the 2 flights of stairs, and he unlocked his door one-handed, moving them both inside. The door closing behind them brought Toshinori some kind of comfort, and that was before Himawari uncurled from her ball on the couch and drunkenly slid to the floor to come rub her cheek against his ruined pant legs. "Please," Toshinori said a few minutes later, as he watched Aizawa carrying fresh sheets to his bedroom. He was growing more exhausted by the second, and in no kind of state to fight the man's pugnacious will, but he couldn't stay silent. "I can't kick you out of your own bed." "I told you, I sleep on the couch more often than not," Aizawa said, shutting the room down with practiced motions, and bending to scoop up Hime and place her back on the couch with a scratch of her ears. "It's fine. And this way, I'm between you and the door." The insight rattled him, telling of a lifetime of threat, and left him speechless in a way Aizawa likely intended. He acceded without struggle when Aizawa physically pulled him toward the bedroom door. In a blur, he found himself barefoot in the middle of a very messy bedroom. He stared at the doorway, where the underground hero stood, gripped by another sideways shiver of fear or uncertainty or danger. "Open or closed?" Aizawa asked. One dirty hand on the door. The binary, as always, helped him think and choose. Open, he rasped, unable to comprehend how pathetic he felt with the flat buzzing in his head. Aizawa nodded and let the door swing half shut behind him, and spoke from the other side. Call me if you need anything. I mean it. Toshinori took a deep breath, held it, and made himself lie down, limb by limb. The clean sheets weren't fitted, but thrown on, and he instantly, uselessly worried about unseating them in the middle of the night and dirtying Aizawa's futon. He was much lower than usual, than his own bed, and the unfamiliar room loomed around him, all shadows and corners. Bare, of course, but for the chaos of clothes and papers on the floor. He had only ever been inside when he found Aizawa after his stint of insomnia, and maybe it was the circumstance of his first memory, but something about the room held suffering and long darkness, and it was ingrained in the very wood of the floor just inches below his back. He arranged and rearranged his long limbs on what was probably the most luxurious kind of futon, but still fell short of his own bed. But then, his body was just looking for things to complain about, distracting itself from the grating ache in his knuckles and the way his heart refused to slow. It was rattling in the room. Couldn't Aizawa hear it? He was exhausted, but how were either of them supposed to sleep? Under the cracked door, a blue-white glow flickered into view. It was Aizawa on his phone, most likely, and the space between them was abruptly too much to bear. Please stay with me. He wanted to fling open the door and beg, wild with exhaustion and pain. Please come be with me. I need you next to me. In the same stuttering breath, he knew he couldn't, and he rolled and pressed his face into Aizawa's pillow to smother the perilous, selfish impulse, grimacing against the familiar rush of tea tree and pine and musk that one clean sheet couldn't mask. He felt safe, or safe enough, but suddenly it wasn't about that. It was about something deeper than not wanting to be alone. Sharpened with fear, but mixing headily until Toshinori's entire broken body throbbed from lack and neglect, the urge to cough bubbling up in his throat. Even if he refused to give the feeling a name, it still left him sick and grieving, hunched around the sprawling scar where his stomach used to be. Curled in an empty bed, Toshinori tried to shove every trace of that hateful weakness down and shook with wet coughs, paralyzed by nothing but loss, loss, loss in triplicate. Loss of what he had, loss of what he never did, and what he never could have. It ate into his heart in waves that clenched and crashed more like sobs than the coughs tearing him in two. Then the door creaked quietly, and he froze. He swallowed hard against the scratch in his throat, and his ears burned for any small sound. His name, a breath, a chance, anything. The impossible, most of all. There were no footsteps, but a familiar sliding sound, the hushed scrape of fur on wood. The instant plummet of Toshinori's heart was firmly checked when he felt a small, warm, clumsy something waddle over his legs and up his middle. Held breath escaping in a painful puff, he instantly reached for Himawari and gathered her close, petting her and pressing a kiss to her velvety ears. Without ado, she settled down bonelessly in the crook of his neck, under his chin, and began purring as loudly as her little body could bear. The gruff, rhythmic sound soothed him impossibly, and Toshinori felt his eyes sting as though from far away, the same hot, full feeling gathering in his throat. He fell into a fitful sleep, petting her, feet too long for the futon and brushing the cool wooden floor, his long fingers stilled in her golden fur, and his cough quieted, and he didn't dream. Outside, the blue-white glow vanished, and the whole apartment stood dark and quiet. The next morning, he turned away from the sun as long as he could, but could only lie stiffly on the floor with his joints aching for so long. He had to get up. He had to move forward, though his eyes and throat felt swollen shut and laced with grit, and his lips were painfully cracked. And, indeed, it hurt to move any which way, much less forward. It was early, though he didn't need to look at his phone. Too early to trouble Aizawa, he decided, which surely had everything to do with courtesy and not how ashamed he was that any of this had even happened, and how intensely he felt the need to remove himself from a bed in an apartment not his own. The desperate thoughts he'd had last night seemed to stain the bed and the room, and he couldn't bear the oily, accusing traces of it, garish in the pale light streaming through the window. The bedroom door was still cracked open, and Toshinori slipped through with a hand over his own mouth, trying to remember where his socks were. He barely made it across the living room, much less to the door, when a guttural, unhappy groan cut the silence of the small apartment.
"How do you even have the energy to try to sneak out?"
"I wasn't sneaking," Toshinori protested weakly, one sock on and absolutely lying. His mind raced. He had very little idea what he actually planned to do with as empty as his head was. Get some fresh air, go for a walk, and circle back with coffee as thanks for lodging, if not the concert itself. Run at full speed to his apartment and lock the door and take a shower so hot he burned away. But he quickly discarded any possible thought of escape, with the rumpled shape on the couch moving like it was. Surrendering, he straightened and fretted at his lone sock, sighing. "But I was also trying not to wake you." Aizawa grunted under his nest of blankets, hulling himself up from the couch as if he weighed more than a mountain, and passed a hand through his tangled hair once he was upright. His bare feet came next in the unfurling, falling to the floor, and he leaned forward onto his spread knees. A single bleary glance in Toshinori's direction was enough to express how thoroughly exhausting the younger hero found him in that moment.
"Sit,"
he croaked, patting the cushion next to him as he rose, shedding the blanket cloak in the process. Toshinori did, knees together, trying not to look half as ashamed or abashed as he felt. Aizawa padded into the kitchen, bending briefly to pet Hime, poking her automatic feeder to give her an early breakfast, and then gathering what he needed to start heating water.
"Do you want tea?"
"I don't want to trouble you," Toshinori said quietly.
"Again? Always?"
The nasty, helpless feeling from last night resurfaced, sinking its claws in. He wanted to put his head between his knees and disappear.
"That's not an answer,"
Aizawa droned, whacking things down on the countertops and sniffing loudly amid the sounds of Hime crunching contentedly on her breakfast.
"I'm making tea. Doing things for others helps me ground. Drink it or don't. But all that dust probably fucked up your throat like mine. Just saying."
Toshinori nodded and made a noise to show he heard, and picked dirt from under his fingernails as he listened to the comforting clank of Aizawa doing things in the kitchen. Metal against plastic, glass against countertops, and the silky hiss of poured ground coffee. Steam carried the metallic yet floral scent of green tea over the air. All normal and daily and real. He was thoroughly lost in the scent and sound of it, when a shape moved to his left and he automatically tensed, hands rattling into the air. It was Aizawa with a mug of tea. The younger hero held it motionless at his elbow, expression blank underneath his tangled hair, until Toshinori managed to reach over and wrap his shaking hands around it, distantly ashamed. He bent and stared into the steaming mug as the younger hero sunk down next to him, breathing in deeply of his own mug before taking a drink. The apartment was so quiet that Toshinori heard him swallow. It sounded difficult, and he had to tell himself not to glance over and check for a bruise on his throat. "How was it?" Aizawa asked after a moment, a patchy whisper into his cup. Whether it was in reference to his sleep or the futon itself, Toshinori knew it was a way of asking after him, so he automatically nodded. "Fine," he said, and they sat in silence, sipping. Part of him knew what Aizawa was waiting for, but he still struggled to verbalize it. After pretending for so long that it wasn't happening, or that it didn't matter if it was, it was just the price he paid, wasn't it? Toshinori took a careful mouth of tea, grimacing at how the clean taste mixed with the chalky remnants of dust and blood before swallowing it all down. No nightmares. Good. Aizawa's eyes closed, and he went back to steadily breathing in his coffee. "Thank you for letting me stay," Toshinori continued, low. He exhaled, and the sheer effort of it shook his chest and his empty head. He nervously felt around the warm mug in his hands. "It was nice knowing I wasn't alone." Aizawa nodded, and that should have been it. But the admission stung, and Toshinori wasn't done with himself. He ducked his head and chuckled bitterly, little more than a wet crackle in his lung and mouth. "Listen to me. I sound like a child in the dark." "You sound like someone who went through an urban attack in an unfamiliar area, while chemically fucked up and could easily be suffering flashbacks or panic attacks," Aizawa countered without so much as a pause, regarding him with glassy eyes and clear exhaustion over his clawed hands. "Someone who deserves a little preventative care or precaution." Toshinori stared at him blankly until a burst of coughs turned his head. "Well, when you put it like that," he said meekly when he found his voice, rallying with a smile. "Don't try to smile just yet. It looks fake, and I'm not your audience." The other hero was clearly still waking up, but his chastising was slicing as ever. Perhaps in the first few weeks of their arrangement, it would have filled Toshinori with shame or alarm. But he had to admit he had learned Aizawa to a certain extent. There was no accompanying glare and no heat behind it. And so the notion settled as a simple truth. Too tired to feel self-conscious, Toshinori dropped his attempt at a smile and just was, rubbing his eyes and drinking his tea. More silence. Was it uncomfortable silence? Thoughts plodding slowly, quickened only by the acrid stirrings of anxiety, Toshinori chewed his lip. "I wanted to..." "Don't apologize," Aizawa said tiredly, shooting the older hero a look when Toshinori's mouth fell open. "I can hear you thinking it." "Are you sure you don't have a mind-reading quirk?" the older hero huffed at length, rubbing at the back of his neck. He frowned, and the simple expression made his temples twinge unpleasantly. "I was just going to apologize specifically for if I hurt you." "Not the first time I've taken an elbow to the throat," Aizawa snorted. "Apology accepted. I'm sorry my stupid best friend gave you weed."
"You encouraged it," Toshinori offered blandly.
Aizawa rolled his eyes.
"Maybe,"
he grumbled, falling bonelessly back against the couch with his mug to his chest. He glared in askance, surly and clearly defeated.
"I thought it could be a good idea."
"Maybe it might have been, if..." Toshinori trailed off, a world of improbabilities spinning out in silence. If he wasn't terrified,
If he could endure being relatively defenseless in crowded places, if he wasn't useless as a hero and yet thoroughly broken for any kind of civilian life. It's normal, you know. Aizawa's voice cut into his thoughts, dangerously soft. Kind in that particular way he was. And it got worse. Sorry for the back of the building when I had to. Toshinori's aching eyes closed. Sorry he had to erase him, strip him of whatever he had left, which wasn't much. It was almost like the beginning of all of this, and the irony didn't escape him. Had they come any distance together, or just circled back around? You had to, Toshinori said firmly, shaking his head and receiving another wave of pinching pain for it. The thought of how he might have injured the man almost made him sick. Still, came the grunt, stubborn and dark. Toshinori almost appreciated it, and Aizawa's principled dislike of the misuse that so defined his nature, if his own mind wasn't wandering back to closed quarters and darkness and dust. He took a deep, rasping breath. Things are so much more dangerous now. The second it was out of his mouth, it sounded like an excuse, and Aizawa called him on it. Bullshit. It's always been dangerous. Always been traumatic, he retorted, flinty gaze locked straight ahead. The golden age of heroes never existed. They just expected you to bury your fear and scream off screen. His anger was palpable, and Toshinori felt it pass through his transparent, aching body, like a heat wave, curling his edges. He felt strangely cowed by it, though it wasn't directed at him, not really. He realized he was holding his breath when a wet, cold something brushed the hand hanging at his side and he jumped. He leaned back over and Himawari's crystal blue orbs stared up at him from the floor, tail flicking hopefully back and forth. If he was ready to smile, she brought it to him, gave him permission to try in earnest. You know so much. I'm grateful to know you, Toshinori murmured as he gathered her up and onto his lap. She yawned and flashed her pointy teeth, the picture of relaxed, and he wished she could loan him some of the feeling. He glanced over at Aizawa, whose sleepy eyes were pinned on the golden red fluff ball curling up in his lap. Thank you for being my friend.
Same,
was all he said, then reached over and ran his fingers over Himawari's back in slow, fluttering patterns. Toshinori's smile warmed, and something in him trembled reassuringly. Aizawa didn't lie. Sitting and petting Himawari, their silence was officially companionable. They were friends, after all.
I wanted to say, hurting is a default of mine because of the kids.
Aizawa continued quietly, glancing up at him with just a hint of wariness, before focusing on stroking his snoozing princess again.
If you feel like I'm doing it to you, tell me. I don't mean to.
Maybe I need it sometimes. Toshinori sighed, sheepish.
And maybe in the beginning I meant to,
he admitted in a grumble, sounding a little embarrassed himself. He shook his head.
Not now.
Maybe they had made some progress, after all. Toshinori ducked his head, long fingers questing cautiously over his throbbing temples. He was abruptly embarrassed at his behavior at the end of the night, how he had tried to thrash away or maintain some facsimile of control when help was right in front of him, throwing a fit like a child resisting the best option just because it stung. I know that you were just trying to help, at the end. I'm sorry I reacted that way.
Don't be. You need to talk like that more often,
Aizawa said, rubbing his face and yawning. When he found Toshinori staring at him, vaguely concerned, he shrugged.
You need to stand up for yourself when you feel you're being disrespected, and you did. Especially if you thought I was overstepping our power dynamic and agreement. That's the point. Unfazed by what was a revelation to half the room's occupants, the homeroom teacher took a second to drain the rest of his coffee, Adam's apple jumping with every gulp and unbruised the naked eye. A relief. And offers of help are hard when you're freaking out. I get it. He muttered, wiping his mouth and rising to his feet. He slouched into the kitchen again, empty mug in the lead. It can feel like the worst kind of condescension, or just an indictment of what you failed to do or who you failed to be. But not here, not from me, and not from anybody on this staff. It's just that. Help, okay? Okay, Toshinori croaked, when the resulting pause had gone on for too long. More a bid for time than a true answer. Aizawa narrowed his eyes over his shoulder as he poured himself a fresh cup. Toshinori heard him sigh. Would you expect the students to bite their tongues and suffer if they needed help that was readily available? Do you think that's noble or useful, especially for their continued health? It was Toshinori's turn to sigh, keeping his attention firmly on Hime as Aizawa returned and settled beside him again. His brain was far too foggy for his personal professor's merciless educational nature. But even he had to see the irony. Why did it always and only click for him when someone put it into the context of others he cared for? Why was suffering something he guarded as if it were a limited resource, which he could swallow down to save others from it, when nothing could be further from the truth? Your generation is something else, he said instead, nursing a faint and faintly bewildered smile. Beside him, Aizawa surfaced from his second dose of caffeine with a low coughing sound. My generation, huh? He croaked, dark eyes glinting with amusement through the artful splay of his fingers, prodding, or at least opening a door to that particular question. Toshinori said intelligently, too tired to feel mortified, but still managing a spooked raise of his brows and a clean redirection of the subject matter. He cleared his throat. That is to say, I don't think I understood how privileged I am to be at UA, if heroes like you have gathered to this school in particular. With such a vision for hero work, it makes me have even higher hopes for your class. Our class, Aizawa said, and whacked his leg. Like he was trying to escape, not lauded ownership, but the work that came with 19 struggling, screaming, exploding, learning students. Our class, Toshinori chuckled, embarrassed in the nicest way. Are you good? Aizawa asked, looking over him with strange care mixed with the mundane bleariness of a man who hated mornings of any sort. You don't have to be yet. I would say you could leave at any time, but you'd take that as an order to leave. I'm good, Toshinori promised with a small smile, self-consciously palming his limp bangs out of his face. Or getting there. Thank you. Yeah, okay, good. Aizawa hummed, nodding to himself and taking another deep drink from his mug. So buy me lunch. What? Toshinori blinked over at Aizawa, who shrugged. I'm hungry, and you clotheslined me in the throat, so buy me lunch. Okay, Toshinori agreed with a ghost of a laugh. His mind turned a little and his brows rose. But I think it would be breakfast at this hour. The simple observation earned him a narrowing of Aizawa's bloodshot eyes over his mug. Buy me whatever arbitrary food you think appropriate for the time of day, he grumbled, the peeved set of his mouth, adding the implied, idiot. It was clear his fellow instructor was trying to give him an out, a consolation prize, a distraction, or a little something to ease his conscience. He was getting something out of it, of course.
Aizawa was no saint. But at that moment, he also looked dangerously close to kicking him out instead of letting Toshinori take him to lunch, and thus abiding his moping, hedging, self-pitying presence for another hour, free food or no. Toshinori got his shit together accordingly. "Yes, yes, of course," he stammered, jostling his knees as if to rise, and wincing as Himawari let out a supremely offended squeak. "Anywhere or anything. I'll pay. You decide."
"There's a diner-type place that opens at 9. American, I guess. Food's cheap, but quick. I'll shower first, then we'll look at your hand," Aizawa said, already getting to his feet and heading down the half-hall.
Unseated and roused, Himawari took the opportunity to run gladly beneath Toshinori's hands, rubbing her oily, kibble-peppered face along his long fingers. And Toshinori watched Aizawa go with a kind of wonder. The smile on his face was faint but real. Breakfast sounded nice, as did going outside. It was nicer still knowing he wasn't alone, even if that wasn't quite the same thing as together.